All right. Welcome in. Welcome in. You are listening to WMUC FM radio here in College Park. I'm Jack Wynn. I'm hosting Winning Time today, your favorite sports talk show in the DMV area. It is our Back to Tuesday schedule, and it has been an insane week of sports. We weren't able to be on last week, but today we have quite a lot to talk about. March Madness has been unbelievable. There's been big news and stories in the NBA, the NFL, women's college basketball, baseball, the World Baseball Classic. Just so much to get into. We're going to dive right in after this quick message.
The University of Maryland Farmers Market can be found weekly at Taz Plaza. There are an abundance of producer-only vendors and a cooking demonstration, with free samples hosted every week at noon. You can find everything from fresh bread, locally grown produce, popcorn, to lip balm, and local animal products. The market runs every Wednesday, rain or shine, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. during the spring season from April to May, and fall season from August to November.
All right, welcome back. We are kicking off an extended two-hour episode today. Very excited about it. We've got plenty of time to dive deep into these major topics, and we are going to start with March Madness, which has been celebrated and honored as one of the most important and exciting sporting events in America, if not the world. That opening weekend with the round of 64 and then round of 32 games is one of the best stretches of sports that you can ask for, having games throughout the day, competitive, exciting, close. I mean, it doesn't really get much better than that. But before we talk about the games that we've seen, I want to talk about why March Madness is so important and why I think it has the hold that it does on sports fans. And even on people who don't really follow sports closely, you still see them making their brackets. You still see them following the games lightly. You know, everybody has some connection to at least one of these teams. There are so many teams and, you know, so many people who go to different schools. So what makes March Madness special is a few things. First of all, it's the age of the players that always stands out to me, because we watch professional sports, you critique them, you say, oh, that was a bad decision, or you praise them. It's very in-depth, there's a lot of pressure, they're being paid for it. I suppose there's a little bit of payment aspect with this now that NIL is in play, which we'll talk about in just a second, but these are teenagers. You know, these are 18 to 21, 22-year-old kids who are playing sports and competing in front of the entire world, in front of millions of people. The pressure and the guts that that takes to step up, perform, and play well is unbelievable. And for these kids, having the opportunity to shine in a moment, to go on a run, to become something that all of America can get behind. When you see a Cinderella story, when you see an underdog go on a run, that invigorates things in people. That inspires people. When you're a 19-year-old kid, fresh off of your, I don't know, your whatever your elective classes you're taking, your gen eds, and you go play basketball on national television and show up, that's legendary stuff. Those are memories that you're going to have for the rest of your life. The vast, vast majority of the players that we watch over the next few weeks in March Madness are going to play in the NBA. Very few of them. Very few of them are going to make it. So for most of these guys, this tournament is going to be the pinnacle of their basketball careers. These players who started playing when they were 3 years old, since they knew how to walk, were the best players in middle school, were the best players in high school, by far, who now struggle to get playing time in college or play at a small school and get a lot of playing time and aren't going to make it to the next level. This is their last chance. And you can feel it in every single possession that they play, no matter the team. Whether it's VCU down by 20 points against North Carolina and coming all the way back, or St. John's and Vanderbilt playing one of the best games that I'd ever seen, the energy and the fight that they put in from possession to possession is amazing to watch. And it's something that you don't really get in the NBA. college basketball, every possession means something. These players are taking it possession at one possession at a time. They don't want to let a single second slip by. Like I said, once it's one and done in the tournament, this may be the last chance that a lot of these guys get to play competitive sports at an organized level. That is hugely important to them. So seeing all of these hundreds of people get their last shots at playing, play in the big moment, a chance to play basketball on a stage that they will not get to see again, that's what makes March Madness special. When an underdog goes on a run, it inspires the people of America who maybe don't believe in themselves or feel like, you know, the hill is too high to climb. Don't believe that. BVCU, come back. Fight every possession you got. So talking about the actual tournament now, we have seen some interesting trends the last few years, and it continued this year, especially on Saturday, or I believe it was Sunday, actually, when all 16 games that were played, the favorite won. We're used to seeing the major upsets, and although we've seen some exciting ones, it really has not been as prevalent so far this tournament. And that is directly attributed to NIL. This is a different game in college basketball now than it was 5-10 years ago. We're not seeing teams stay together, remain collected. There was a chart that went viral on social media, I believe posted by CBS, where they broke down where each player of the Sweet 16 teams started in college. For example, let's say I'm playing for Michigan State, but I started at Maryland. On the chart, it would show up as a Maryland player. And what we saw is that many of these teams are based around players who didn't originally come to their school. They were brought in from the transfer portal. They were given big deals in NIL. They were incentivized to come to a bigger, more established school. And while that leads to great teams, and we see some great games, Duke is an amazing team. You know, Florida, Michigan are stacked teams, and it'll be exciting to see if these guys match up at the end. But we're losing out a bit on what used to make March Madness extra special, which was everything that I said to lead the show. But in addition, you got to see teams grow together. You know, 5-6 years ago, Gonzaga, with Drew Timmy and the Jalen Suggs team, they were built, and we saw them grow and get their four shots at the title. They came up short, but that was a team that we were able to follow. Maryland's team from last year was the exact opposite. Our whole program fell apart because we lost our coach, we lost our access to the deals and the NIL, and we had to completely reset with a completely new roster. That's the kind of thing that's happening today. That's why over the last three seasons, we've seen more 1, 2, 3, and 4 seeds in the Sweet 16 than ever before. So it's an interesting trend. NIL is obviously new. They're trying to regulate it, trying to improve it. And I think once you get to a point where you're able to disincentivize loading up the big teams, abandoning schools that quickly, we may go back to seeing some of the, you know, the core team building, program building aspects that we love about college sports. That's what people love about college football. You see a program build and grow and develop. In college basketball, guys are moving around very, very fast. So I think for the sake of March Madness, for the sake of college sports as a whole, I would like some more regulations on transfer portal stuff, on NIL stuff. I think it would be really helpful for the league. I think it would be really helpful for sports. And let's get back to having that kind of, you know, team identity that we all used to love about March Madness. Let's see some more guys grow as a team. Now maybe they have a better shot at knocking off one of these, you know, top seeds. Okay, I want to talk about some specific games, though, because as much as I can talk generally about March Madness, I could probably yap about that for a very long time. We have seen some epic ones. And I have to start with Kentucky-Santa Clara, which was one of the most incredible games and maybe the most incredible finish I'd ever seen to a college basketball game. The two-pointer with 20 seconds left, Kentucky trailed Santa Clara by two. They then hit the game-tying two, which was a contested layup inside. Santa Clara nailed a three, which could have been a game winner. The whole stadium erupted. And then Otega Owe from Kentucky their star, nails a half-court shot, banks it in as time expires to take it to overtime. Kentucky went on to win 89-84. And that story is exactly the kind of stuff that I was talking about earlier. These players are not older than 21, 22 years old, and they are having epic moments on national television. Otega Owe will remember that for the rest of his life. And by the way, Owe had an unbelievable game leading up to that. People are going to remember the shot. He finished the game with 35 points. He was 10 of 12 from the field, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, plus a block and a steal. A truly unbelievable performance from him. And those are the kinds of things that will make somebody's life. I don't know what Otega Owe's future looks like, but he had an unbelievable season, and he got to have that unbelievable moment that he and sports fans will have forever. Kentucky, of course, got blown out in their next game against Iowa State. Iowa State's a good team. I believe I had them making it to my Elite Eight. I'll talk about my bracket in a second. But what happens a lot is you see teams fight and have these really close games, and then they end up getting blown out the next round. And I do think there's something to be said about what it takes out of you to have one of those moments. And so for Kentucky to lose by 19 after playing such a thriller, it wasn't totally shocking. It would have been nice to see them a little more competitive. We're also very used to Kentucky losing early in tournaments. I get that they're a new program now. John Calipari is gone. They've brought in new coaches. They've brought in new staff. But they still have the pedigree of a blue blood school, and unfortunately, they are still taking the losses that we're used to seeing from them. All right, the next game I want to talk about was the Miami versus Tennessee game. And this was an interesting story. For those of you who weren't following Miami, Ohio, they had a very unique run to get to the tournament. They come from, they're a small, very small school. They play in a lower conference, a lower division, and they did not play a lot of good teams. I believe they played two teams that were in Quad 1. Quad 1 is an upper-level contender that's like in a difficult environment. They lost the only game they played, and then they snuck in a win at the very last second. So against good teams, they were not superb at all, but they also only played good teams once or twice. Every other team they played, they beat. They started 30-0. They lost in their conference tournament, and then they got that last win to get into the tournament at 32-1. 32-1 was their record, and they had to get in as the first four as an 11 seed and match up against Tennessee. And you had to put them in, or at least give them the shot to get in. Because if you play that well in sports, you deserve a chance, especially with 64 teams. It's not like college football where, you know, a couple years ago, Florida State went 13-0 and they couldn't get in the tournament because there were only four teams. There are 64 teams here. You have to put Miami, Ohio in just because of the regular season they had. You can't just dismiss them outright. Unfortunately, despite their great season against poor competition, and despite pretty much all of America backing them and wanting to see them succeed, because a school coming from this lower level and going on the tournament run would be incredible. It would be one of the best Cinderella stories that we'd seen in March Madness. However, the skeptics were unfortunately correct. And this Miami-Ohio team that appeared as Goliaths to the lower competition faced up against a Goliath themselves. And they lost by 22 against Tennessee, and it was pretty much over by the time it started. They lost the first half 51-32. They were down by 20 points very quickly, and there just was nothing that they could do to make up for that. They did have a great season. They should all be very proud of themselves. Peter Sutter, incredible player, incredible season. He had 27 points against Tennessee. The only guy who really got out there and played his game. Great season from them. They should be proud of themselves. They won that first four game to get into the tournament. They were celebrating quite a bit. I wonder if they viewed getting into March Madness a bit as their main accomplishment while Tennessee was trying to go on a run. Tennessee, by the way, playing some unbelievable basketball. They just won a great one against Virginia. They made the Sweet 16 for, I think, the fourth season in a row. That is a program that is becoming more and more established and more reliable. Like, this is a team that you can probably expect to be picking next year to go. They've got a great chance to win their next game in the Sweet 16. You know, they play Iowa State, who's a really good team. That's going to be a really good game. But both teams are really hot right now. I want to shout out Jacoby Gillespie, who will always be a Maryland legend in my eyes. After the season that he had with us last year, the leadership he showed, the dynamics, the playmaking, just a really great player and a fun player. He had 29 points and 6 threes and 9 assists against Miami, Ohio. 3 steals, just a tour de force for Gillespie, running up the show. He had 22 points at halftime. There was just nothing that they could do to stop him. It makes me miss him so, so much as a Terps fan, but I'm happy to see him succeeding and thriving over at Tennessee. At least it's not Villanova, where Kevin Willard is residing. There was quite the watch to cheer against him during that Utah State game, and I'm glad that Utah State was able to come back and pull it out. But yeah, I would have loved to see Gillespie back in Maryland. Good luck to Miami, Ohio next year. Tennessee, a good chance to go on a run now that we move to the Sweet 16. Last night, speaking of missing last year, was the one-year anniversary of Derek Queen's buzzer beater against Colorado State. And I just want to take one more moment to reflect on what that shot meant for him, what that shot meant for the program, what it meant for the season, because it really was incredible. I remember watching the game. I was abroad. I was in Italy. And it was 2 or 3 in the morning. And I was up, still watching. And I ended up doing cartwheels down the streets of Italy as soon as Derek Queen nailed that shot. I mean, the spin, demanding the ball in the huddle, catching it at the top of the key, drive inside, spin, fade away, banks it, game. We had been on the opposite end of so many buzzer beaters and so many game winners and coming up short, and it seemed like it was about to happen to Maryland again. But Derek Queen, who was the established leader and established superstar on the team, wanted to get his own shot with confidence and with strength. And for a prospect who had a very good season but was flying under the radar for NBA scouts, that shot reminded them of the caliber of player he truly is. He's not just a talented big man. He is a clutch, leader, kind, confident, talented big man. And he is maybe one of the reasons that the Pelicans were so confident in drafting him as high as they did, because the Pelicans took a risk on him. It seems to be paying off. He's had a great rookie season. And it's cool to see him continue to play his game at a higher level after seeing him come up so big in one of those kinds of spots. I also want to shout out the St. John's game, which was the second buzzer beater that we've seen in the tournament. It was a great shot, 67-65, just drove right inside. That ending, by the way, was really fascinating. So if you missed the game, I want to credit the Vanderbilt coach. Excuse me, not Vanderbilt. I want to credit the Kansas coach, Bill Self. It was St. John's, Kansas. Kansas took the lead. St. John's had the ball, and the game was tied with 15 seconds left, and Kansas found themselves in a unique spot, which was they had 4 fouls to give in 15 seconds. So what went from St. John's and Rick Pitino having the opportunity to draw up a play and get the ball up with 15 seconds and then run what they like to run, Kansas intentionally fouled them every 3 seconds. So when St. John's finally had their chance, they only had 3 seconds to make a play. But guess what? It didn't matter. Because Dylan Daring drove past the Kansas defenders, put up the layup that won them the game, and it was incredible. He was not worried about the moment. He drove right inside, put up a tough shot. Kansas was afraid to foul after doing it so much, and he put the game away. It was his first made basket of the game. He had 2 points, and it was just the game winner. What a moment. Like, think about that for a second. Dylan Dehring played 18 minutes the entire game, had one rebound, a couple assists, no points, 0 of 4 from the field, 0 of 4 from 3. He gets the ball with 3 seconds left, hits the game winner. That's exactly what March Madness is about. And you love to see that for him. He had a funny moment with Rick Pitino after the game where he said it was his first college buzzer beater. And the coach asked him, oh, what'd you do in the NBA? And he was like, no, coach, I'm talking about middle and high school. This is a funny moment. For Kansas, they come up short again. They're always a frequent pick to make the Elite Eight, the Final Four for teams, but a tough loss here to St. John's. Darren Peterson had a great game for some of it. 5 of 15 from the field. He was aggressive. He had 4 blocks. He showed off why he's going to be one of the top picks in the NBA this year, if not the top pick. But you would have liked to see a superstar like him come through a little more and, you know, elevate and win them a close game. If you've got a superstar like that, you should win a game against college players. But congratulations to St. John's. They move on further in the tournament. And now we're going to talk about my Final Four. Now, my Final Four is intact. It is the same as it was when this tournament started. And we're going to walk you through it. First of all, we've only seen all 4 1-seeds get there once. So you can't have all 4 1-seeds really at the end. That's also just boring. You don't want to pick a chalk bracket. So the first team, I've got 2 1-seeds, and I'll tell you who they are. The first team is Michigan. Michigan has had an unbelievable season. They're a very well-rounded, well-coached team, and they're deep. You know, they've played with a lot of resilience this year. They've been really dominant so far early in the tournament, and I think that says a lot about them and the path that they're going to have going forwards. You know, they've won their last 2 games by an average score of 22, so they're now facing up against Alabama. I think they're going to win that game. I think that they beat either Tennessee or Iowa State, who are going to be coming off of a really brutal one, because that game is very exciting. And it'll be interesting to see. But Michigan has shown themselves all year. I have no reason to believe they won't make the Final Four, especially in the Midwest. Moving on to the East, I'm picking Michigan State. And that's because I think this is going to be the first one seed that falls is Duke. They've got a big game against St. John's. St. John's has played competitively. The trend we've noticed is that teams that win on buzzer beaters and in great close games often burn out for the next one. However, that's just because of the schedule. When you play a really tough, hard game on Friday and then you have to play again on Sunday, that's a lot. St. John's just played on Sunday. They're not going to have to play again until Thursday. So they've got time. They're going to give Duke a real run for their money. And then Michigan State or UConn, I think, are going to knock them out. Those are 2 good teams. I don't think Duke is the team that's going to make the big run here. The reason I picked Michigan State was because I felt like between the 3 options I was considering, I don't think St. John's has enough juice to get to the Final Four. But between Duke, Michigan State, and UConn, I feel like Duke and UConn are they're the 2 blue bloods. They've had success, but they've been coming up short the last year or so. UConn obviously had back-to-back titles that they're still trying to gather back from after losing those upperclassmen. I just think these 2 programs are still in awkward phases. I think Michigan State is primed to upset 1, if not both of them. And so I went with a bit of a gamble, but I do think Michigan State is going to go all the way. Jeremiah Fears, great player. Excited to see how these teams match up. So we've got Michigan State, and we've got Michigan, which would make for a great final if it came down to it with that rivalry. But now moving on to the West. I went with Arizona, a team that has been knocking on the door for the last few years. They've been a 1 seed frequently. They've tried to get to championships. They've tried to get to Final Fours, and they just haven't gotten there yet. For the fans, we would love to see them break through. Arkansas is a really good team. I think they're going to play Arizona pretty tough, actually. But I think that Arizona will handle confidently either Texas or Purdue, whoever comes through. People are really high on Purdue this year. I don't see it. Purdue is, you know, very much an upset magnet, it seems, year after year. Granted, Zach Edey is gone, so it's a little more difficult to plan around them. But I do think Arizona has been one of the best teams all season. They're a one seed for a reason, and I think that they make it to the Final Four. And my last Final Four team is Houston, which means that the last one seed to go down, I expect to be Florida. And Florida had a scare. Oh, Florida's down. I misspoke. The next one seed to go down would be Duke. Iowa knocked out Florida in the last round in an unbelievable game. That three-pointer, by the way, from the corner to eliminate a one seed, he shot that with guts, and that was a great look. So, super proud of the Iowa, that Iowa team for coming through that way, which leaves Houston now as the clear favorite. I had Houston over Florida in my Elite Eight, but now that Florida's out of it, Illinois is really the last team that's going to give Houston a real run for their money in the South, and I do expect Houston to win that game. Illinois is a good team. They haven't really played any good teams yet. Neither has Houston, but they've been so dominant. This is going to be the first real competition for both Houston and Illinois. I'm interested to see how it plays out. So that leaves, on the left side of the bracket, Houston and Michigan State. And on the right side, Arizona and Michigan. I love Michigan State. They've been my team for a minute. But at least for this tournament, I mean, once I pick them. But once it comes to the Final Four, you need experience and you need confidence. Houston is going to have been coming off of a big win against Illinois and a confident win against either Nebraska or Iowa, while Michigan State, I mean, will have gone through battles against UConn, Duke, or St. John's. I think Houston's going to be fresher. I think Houston makes the championship. And on the opposite side, I think Arizona gets through. This is a team that plays really solid foundational basketball. Michigan, while they're very well-rounded, they are prone to mistakes. And we've seen Michigan teams in past tournaments come up short in bigger moments. I think Arizona plays with a lot of camaraderie. I think that they are well-coached and well-prepared. And I think they're going to make the championship. And I do think they're going to beat Houston. Houston has had some moments this year that's made me doubt them. I don't have a lot of reason to doubt Arizona. I want to see them get through. I want to see them win. That's why my pick is Arizona over Houston in the championship, with Michigan and Michigan State coming up next in that Final Four. Those are my picks for March Madness. They were my picks before the tournament. They're still my picks into the tournament. Pretty proud of myself for all four of my Final Four teams surviving that first weekend. I expect them all to survive next weekend as well. All right. We are through the first major portion of our show. We are going to take a quick break, and when we return, we've talked about college legacies and what it means for these young players. We're going to talk about the legacies of some real NBA legends, and we'll be right back with you after this.
Campus Pantry is a free resource available for all UMD students, faculty, and staff experiencing food insecurity. It is open 5 days a week from 10 to 5 and is located on the ground floor of the South Campus Dining Building, next to the Common Shop. You must swipe your university ID before entering and check out before leaving. Make sure to bring your own reusable bag. For more information, you can visit the UMD Campus Pantry website at campuspantry.umd.edu. That's campuspantry.umd.edu. The University of Maryland Farmers Market can be found weekly at Taz Plaza. There are an abundance of producer-only vendors and a cooking demonstration, with free samples hosted every week at noon. You can find everything from fresh bread, locally grown produce, popcorn, to lip balm, and local animal products. The market runs every Wednesday, rain or shine, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. during the spring season from April to May and fall season from August to November.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. somebody. Help! You know I need someone.
Help! Stressed? Need to talk? Call Help Center, a peer counseling and crisis intervention hotline at the University of Maryland. Help Center is here to listen. No issue is too big or too small. We are here for you. Help Center offers anonymous and confidential hotline phone calls and walk-in services, free anonymous pregnancy testing, and free condoms. Call 301-314-HELP or stop by Help Center on the third floor of South Campus Diner today. You are not alone. Won't you please, please help me?
All right, welcome back. Welcome back. You are listening to Winning Time with your host, Jack. I just rhymed. I'm a poet, and I didn't even know I was rhyming those words. Okay. We've seen some huge legacy stuff happening in the NBA the last week or so, and I want to give these three legends their shine, starting with Kevin Durant, who officially passed Michael Jordan for fifth all-time on the scoring list this week. Congratulations to him. This is a massive accomplishment. Anytime you pass Michael Jordan in a scoring stat, it is a big deal. And Kevin Durant's legacy is very unique. Very unique. We haven't seen a superstar in sports quite like him before. And I want to start with the celebratory stuff, because this should be a moment that Kevin Durant can cherish. He has established and proven himself since the beginning of his career as not only a great scorer, but one of the greatest scorers of all time. He's played himself off at 6'9". We all know he's closer to 7 feet tall. He's got handles like a guard. He can shoot from all three levels. There's nobody really who can guard him because of how he can elevate. And it led to some unbelievable runs. He won MVP in 2014. He had multiple 30-point per game seasons. He's efficient, and he's great on the offensive end. He's had some great defensive end plays throughout his career. But passing Michael Jordan all-time in the scoring list is symbolic of the effort and the work that he's put in his entire career. Kevin Durant, whether you respect it or not, has openly neglected the role of leadership in basketball. He feels that's the responsibility of the coach, which is a fair take. A lot of people expect superstars to step up into that role a bit, but for Kevin Durant, his focus has been simple. He wants to work on his game, and he wants to play basketball because he just loves hoops. And every day you'll see him in the gym. He's not going to be lifting weights. He's probably not working on his body. He'll be working on his handle. He'll be working on his jumper. He'll be working on his fadeaway or his turnaround. The skills, the type of hoops that you would need if you show up to a rec basketball park and you just want to play with your friends. Kevin Durant is unstoppable in those areas. Unfortunately, it hasn't exactly led to a lot of winning. And this accomplishment, while historic and while it deserves to be celebrated for, you know, his two championships, his two finals MVPs, all the points, the regular season MVP, the scoring titles, which he has multiple of, all of it. His legacy stands alone because he is the only all-time superstar to not lean into that leadership role. And it has led to him coming up short in a lot of different areas throughout his career. And those first, Kevin Durant in his 20s versus Kevin Durant in his 30s, from a legacy perspective, are completely different players. Kevin Durant, for the first 11 years of his career, was making multiple deep playoff runs. We saw him in conference finals. We saw him in an NBA championship in 2012 when he went on that run and lost to the Heat. They were back in the conference title game, or in the conference championship, a couple times. The conference finals, excuse me, I'm mixing sports here. He's made a couple runs to the conference finals. And then he went to Golden State, where he won his two championships, made another, got hurt. And since then, he hasn't been back and hasn't been close to back. As I said, Kevin Durant, from OKC to Golden State, multiple conference titles, an MVP, two finals MVPs, two championships, three championship appearances. He's played 11 minutes after round two since they won the title. He's never been past round two since he left Golden State. This is a player who, as good as he is at basketball, is not a player who's going to directly lead to winning. He will make your team a lot better, but the traits that make him great at hoops. They do not make teams great at winning. That's what separates guys like Stephen Curry and LeBron of this generation. Those are the guys that will elevate a team and come through in the big spots and rally a team. Kevin Durant just plays. And nothing summed this up more than the Rockets-Lakers game we saw last week. When, even now, in their old age, we see the difference between LeBron and KD. Where it was a big moment, they flashed the Lakers bench, and LeBron had everybody in the huddle. He was barking out orders, telling people what they need to do better. Hey, you need to go stand over here, make sure that you're watching this guy when he cuts inside. And then they cut to the Rockets bench, and everyone's sitting by themselves. And KD is sitting alone drinking a water. No wonder the Lakers came through in that game. No wonder. So, we've all asked Kevin Durant to take a role that he hasn't wanted. And maybe he doesn't really care about legacy the way that we do. Which, if not, good for him. We have no responsibility to tell this millionaire super athlete what he can and can't care about. But for the people that think it matters, it's a little disappointing. There was a point where people would argue that Kevin Durant was a top 10 player all time, or at the very least that he was pacing for it. Kevin Durant now is closer to top 20 than he is to top 10. There's an argument that he's not a top 20 player all time. I know it sounds ridiculous, and just because of how ridiculous it sounds, I'll take you through it. In no particular order, your top 12 players are LeBron, Bill Russell, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, Kareem, Tim Duncan, Kobe Bryant, Larry Bird, Shaquille O'Neal, Wilt Chamberlain, and Magic Johnson. Those are the 12. After them, you have, or Stephen Curry, excuse me, I said Magic already. Those are the first 12. After them, Dr. J, Moses, Nikola Jokic, Oscar Robertson. These are guys that Kevin Durant isn't better than. You want that already puts him in the top, outside the top 15. You want to have that conversation about him and Giannis? You want to have that conversation about him and Isaiah Thomas? I would even put Dwayne Wade in that range. Kevin Durant had a great run, and he's a very talented player. But we don't reward talent and scoring with top 10 all-time accolades. You need to contribute to winning, and you need to be the driving force of a real team to get there. That's my opinion. I still want to see KD go on another run before the end of his career. I don't think we're going to get it. Not in Houston, unless this team comes together really fast and is stable without him. All right, moving on. We're going to talk about Dennis Rodman, who has arguably an even more unique legacy than Kevin Durant. Because Rodman is not one of the all-time, you know, top 20 players, but he is the greatest rebounder of all time, or at least in that conversation. He is one of the greatest defenders of all time and one of the most physical players. He was a driving force of the original Pistons dynasty in the 90s and the Bulls' second dynasty in the late 90s. So his accolade, what we're awarding him and celebrating him for, is not basketball related. Rather, it's something symbolic of his career and how he operated as a person. Because Dennis Rodman is being inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. He's not a wrestler. He made a couple appearances during his active career. Dennis Rodman, he took multiple days off without telling anybody where he was going during the late stages of a regular season or of an NBA season. He married Carmen Electra. He married himself. He is friends with Supreme Leader Kim Jong-un, the mad dictator in North Korea. He is the U.S. diplomat at one point. This guy has had an unbelievable life. An unbelievable life. He's such a fascinating person and character. And making it to the Hall of Fame, of course, for basketball, but now also for WWE, for his entertainment value, I mean, what else says Dennis Rodman than that? Okay, the last all-time, you know, achievement that we're going to talk about comes from, in my opinion, the greatest basketball player of all time, LeBron James. He passed Robert Parrish officially for the most all-time games played, 1,612. And it is just a testament to his longevity and his greatness. I have said that when you are truly great at something, truly great, you have a responsibility to give it to the world as much as possible. I heard it somewhere. It's one of my favorite quotes. It's why we see musicians doing concerts until they're 80 or 90. It's why we see athletes play late into their careers. It's why we see chefs making food until they have to retire. People love doing things that they're really great at. TV hosts. There's no reason that Jim Carson and Jeff Probst, they're all getting older, but they love doing it and they're truly great at it. You have a responsibility to the world to provide us with the talent that you have. And LeBron James has embodied that as well as anybody else. He has played more minutes than any player in NBA history. He has scored more points than any player in NBA history. He has more assists than all but one player in NBA history. He is one of the most versatile defenders ever and one of the most athletic players ever. So to make it to year 23, to now start playing consistently once again after some missed time. LeBron's had some missed time this year, but he's still churning out 30-minute nights. And he's playing better, too. His last month has been his best basketball of the season. He had a game where he had 30 points, and he only missed one shot all night that he definitely got fouled on, but they didn't call it, and then followed it up the next game with a triple-double. The guy's 41 years old, and he's still playing unbelievable. Nobody has made it to year 22, let alone year 23, and nobody who made it past year 20 was playing the way that he did. It's just truly incredible. And the body of work for LeBron is just so massive and so extensive. He's 22-time All-Star, 22-time All-NBA. Michael Jordan was an 11-time All-Star with the Bulls. That's double Michael Jordan's career with the Bulls, guys. So we can talk about peak. We can talk about, you know, who was better in their primes. But when we're talking about greatness, the guy who has played more basketball than anyone, scored more than anyone, passed more than anyone, you know, played more than anyone, how are they not the greatest? Okay, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're breaking down some NFL news. There have been a lot of signings, a couple trade rumors that we're going to get into. Very exciting stuff. I love talking about basketball, but there's always drama in the NFL offseason. We'll be right back with you after this.
Are you looking for a club that celebrates friendship? Then Best Buddies might be the one for you. We organize social events for local folks with disabilities to come to campus and hang out. Some of our highlights of the past years have been our holiday parties, a polar bear plunge in the freezing Chesapeake Bay, a friendship walk with Best Buddies branches from around the state, and a winter formal with over 80 people. And if you want to learn more information, check out our Instagram at BestBuddiesUMB.
Care to Stop Violence is a campus resource housed in UMD's University Health Center. The Care Office provides free, confidential advocacy and therapy services for survivors of sexual assault, relationship violence, stalking, and sexual harassment. Survivors and their supporters can make an appointment with a trained advocate or call our 24/7 hot crisis line to speak to someone right away. Additionally, we work to empower the campus community to prevent power-based violence through educational presentations, events, and outreach activities. Learn more about our available services and programs by visiting health.umd.edu/care.
All right, welcome back in. We have got a lot of NFL news to get into. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to WMUC FM radio here in College Park. This is your favorite sports talk show, Winning Time. I'm your host, Jack Wynn, and we're going to get into the biggest NFL news that we've heard recently, starting with arguably the biggest celebrity in the NFL at this point, Travis Kelce, re-signing with the Kansas City Chiefs, officially returning for this season, and I was thrilled to see it. I was a little confused, or surprised, I say, because I expected Kelce to retire. His performance has notably fallen off the last two seasons. He is very involved in real world stuff now with, you know, Taylor Swift, his wife, being continuing to grow as a global superstar, him being involved in podcasts and a ton of different broadcast opportunities and endorsements and ways for him to elevate his career outside of sports. But something about this passion for the game and desire to keep playing brings him back. Also, I think it says that it's more likely than not that Mahomes will be back earlier in the season. I don't exactly think that Travis Kelce is signing up for one last ride with Justin Fields as his main quarterback. So if Kelsey's confident, that gives me a little optimism as a fan and as an analyst that Mahomes may be making a quicker return from his injury, an injury which was so heartbreaking to see, but all the rumors are that he's making a fast recovery. The contract for Kelce was interesting. They signed him to what is technically a 3-year, 50-something million dollar deal, which is obviously absurd, especially for a player of his age and caliber. But the way that they structured it, it's really a 1-year deal. It allows them a lot more flexibility with cap space stuff over the next couple of seasons if they can draw string out the contracts, maybe bring in some more guys from Mahomes once he's gone, get Kelce his money when he retires. So this is his last year. The contract is set up for him to retire after the season. The additional 2 years on the contract are for cap space, mumbo jumbo, financial stuff that the general managers handle, if anybody's confused. But I'm excited to see Kelce back once again. He knows it's his last year this time. I think he's going to give it everything he's got. This is a Chiefs team that is in a bit of a transitionary period. They just traded Trent McDuffie. They're still having issues on the wide receiver room. They just cut their starting right tackle. Mahomes is hurt. They still don't really have reliable depth across the team. So Kelce's a leader. He's one of the most inspirational players in the league right now. I expect the Chiefs to kind of rally behind him, especially if Mahomes comes back. I'm excited to see it. Next, Jaxon Smith-Njigba becoming the highest paid receiver in the NFL, cracking $42.5 million per year, a 4-year, $168.9 million deal. Really good for him. I'm really proud of him. Super stoked for Jaxon Smith-Njigba. That's generational wealth for his family. 5 years ago, receivers weren't getting anything close to this. I remember Julio Jones broke banks because he signed for $22 million a year as a receiver. And now we're up over $40 million. So there are quarterbacks that make less than that. And it's so interesting because here's the thing. We've seen a lot of one-and-done receivers. Josh Gordon, Michael Thomas, guys who have great seasons once and then start to fall off. JSN is young. He is improving. He is a great route runner, and he has exceptional hands. Those are traits that are translatable from year to year. Not to mention, he is the sole focus of their passing game. He is often designed as the number one target, and most of the plays that they run are designed to get him open rather than to create options for Darnold, which is going to lead to even more targets. He was on pace for 2,000 yards at one point this season. And giving that much money that quickly, because it's only his third year, to a player who's had just one season of that elite level play does give me a bit of pause, because we don't know what he's going to look like in year two. Is this a one-off? Is he just one of the best receivers in the league now? I don't know. But when you run your offense through somebody and they're due for money, and they just won a Super Bowl with him, by the way. You got to get your guy right. And that's exactly what the Seahawks did. Speaking of wide receivers being done right, let's talk about Jaylen Waddle, who was traded to the Broncos from Miami. And I thought it was an interesting trade because Jaylen Waddle is an explosive and fast player. He's not a wide receiver one. He's a wide receiver two. But he's going to be treated like the wide receiver one in Denver. And for the Broncos, I think this trade is really... I think it's interesting. Because for most teams, Jaylen Waddle, I don't see as a ceiling raiser. He is a very good player, but you're not going to win a Super Bowl because you add Jaylen Waddle. The Broncos' receivers aren't awful. Cortland Sutton's a fine player. Granted, they have almost nothing after him, but we saw Troy Franklin come up nice in a couple of spots. The question is Bo Nix. And I get wanting to help him, and you're putting him in a position now where it's going to be way easier, and the defense is going to have to spread out, which allows Nix to be more, you know, elusive and mobile and run around a bit. But I don't think that this trade makes the Broncos contenders. I think it just makes them a slightly better version of what they were last year. And they were knocking on the door last year. They were contenders. But if they win, I don't think it's going to be because of Jaylen Waddle. I think it'll be because Bo Nix took that next step. If Nix can't be a franchise quarterback, or at the very least a high-level game manager, Denver can't win. So we'll see how Sean Payton integrates Waddle into the roster, into the game plan. I think it's interesting. For Miami, by the way, trading him is just a symbol that they're blowing everything up. They just extended him last year, but now they're cutting Tyreek Hill. They cut Tua. They traded Jaylen Waddle. They are tearing the whole thing down. They're rebuilding. And this is going to be a rough one for Dolphins fans. I wish all them luck. Last thing on the NFL end, A.J. Brown has been tied to the Patriots a lot. I don't think he's going to be traded just because there's really no reason to. The Eagles roster is so good with him. And if you take A.J. Brown away, it completely changes the way that defenses have to plan for him. We've already seen Jalen Hurts struggling in the passing game and teams trying to take advantage of that. If you take away his number one freak athlete receiver, teams are going to start stacking the box. It's going to get a lot more difficult for the Eagles offense. I don't see a benefit of trading him other than clearing out that culture and the environment. But if you get the right leadership in there, it shouldn't matter. For New England, I would love it. They just signed Romeo Doubs and are paying him 20-something million a year, which I don't really understand. Bringing in A.J. Brown would elevate the Patriots. A.J. Brown is a better player than Jaylen Waddle. Giving Drake May A.J. Brown, giving him a true number one, that would elevate New England. And that would make that offense incredibly scary because you had to worry about Drake May's deep ball, but you were worried about him throwing it to Kayshon Boutte and to Pop Douglas now that they cut Stephon Diggs. If they trade for A.J. Brown somehow, that team is going to be really dangerous. All right, we're going to wrap up the first hour of our show. As I mentioned, it is a special two-hour episode today, and we have been extended from 12 to 2. We're going to talk about women's basketball, and we're going to start with UConn on the college end. I haven't followed women's college hoops as closely as I had the last few seasons when we saw Caitlin Clark dominating, when we saw Paige Beckers continuing to shine, and even Juju Watkins playing really well, Hannah Hidalgo. A lot of these players are flying a lot more under the radar. They're not having as incredible moments. And a lot of that is because women's college basketball has been a bit of a monopoly. UConn has been so dominant for so long. And we're not seeing a lot of these other great teams stacked up. South Carolina, like we'd seen in the past, Maryland, all having weird seasons. And UConn won their last game by almost 100 points. They were up by 40-something at half. Strong is a great player. She has been dominant throughout this tournament. I fully expect UConn to go on to win this thing pretty handily. But I want to move now to a higher level and take it to the WNBA. Because, real quick before we do, though, I do wish Juju Watkins was still playing. She obviously got hurt last year. She's the presumed number one pick in the WNBA draft. We'll see how her career adjusts. But for the WNBA, they got some big news. All the money is changing. And when I say the numbers, some of it might shock you because they were making less than school teachers as professional athletes. Their minimum is going from, I believe, $60,000 for a player all the way up to $350,000, a minimum contract. That's awesome. The maximum contracts are going from a little over $200,000 to $1.5 million. These WNBA players are finally getting paid. They are getting their money. And you have to credit Caitlin Clark for it because of how the league has exploded as a direct result of her popularity and her play style and her social media presence and her celebrity, all of it. Giving WNBA players more of a spotlight, bringing in way more attention to these games, way more television, national televised moments for them. Caitlin Clark has teams not playing in their normal home stadium and having to move to a bigger stadium just because so many people want to watch her play. This is more money, it's more viewership, it's higher ratings, and it's why these WNBA players are finally earning what they deserve. And one fun thing that I want to point out as we wrap up the last couple minutes of the first hour here is the WNBA players' agents were really smart with this because this new CBA is going to be implemented, which is the collective bargaining agreement, is going to be implemented next offseason where these contracts are going to be expanded. And wouldn't you just look at that? Almost every single great player in the WNBA is up for a new contract next offseason. They saw this coming over the last few years. They signed shorter deals. They're taking player options out of deals so that they can get that money quicker. These are players who have put their careers on the line for the WNBA, and now they are excited to go get that money as quick as possible. It's a lot of really great players up for contract. It's a ton of players from the Liberty, a ton of players from the Aces. It's roughly 80% of the league's top stars. It's Aja Wilson, Breonna Stewart, Nafisa Collier, Ionescu, everybody, Jackie Young, Jonquel Jones, literally the best players in the league, Arike Ogunbowale from the Wings, great players, all up for contract. They're all going to get that bag, get that money, and I'm super happy for them for it. I'm excited to see how next year plays out because we get Paige back, we get Caitlin back, we get to see where all of these unrestricted free agents end up. It's going to be a great league shuffle, you know, to see where all the great players go. But I do imagine most of them will return to the teams that they've played their careers with. Aja will return. Jackie Young will return. Sabrina will return. But it's going to be for a lot more money. All right, that's the first hour of our show. Quick preview to the next hour. We're going to be talking about the big flag football game, some great NBA performances from the last week, a segment I like to call High Speed Headlines, and we'll wrap it up with some hot takes. We'll be right back with you after this.
Mm-hmm.